course, orient means east, so the term orientation originally referred to the fact that the sun rises in the east, so you could figure out what the cardinal directions would be. The sun, of course, rises in the east and sets in the west, so it works the same in the evening. With the advent of a compass, one could easily locate north, or at least approximate north, and from there, use a map and make your way around. In my class, Stevens wished a compass that pointed in a northerly direction. From that, one could discern all manner of things, such as east, south, west, and points in between. For us locally, true north is not actually where the needle points, but it's pretty close. So if you're walking with a map in your hand, you can kind of figure out where you're going. I've read articles about magnetic north, scientific articles that tell us about it, how it works, and why the compass works so well. Old school, I know, but that's me. One of the features of compass navigation is that every so many years, magnetic north switches to the south, so it becomes magnetic south if the compass is pointing in a different direction, or if there were compasses, would point in a different direction. In the orienteering realm, the world literally turns upside down. In today's gospel lesson from Matthew, Jesus turns the world upside down in another way. The lesson that we have today only appears in the Gospel of Matthew. For perspective on today's story, the lesson follows a conversation between Peter and Jesus. Peter asks Jesus, "Who can be saved?" Jesus tells Peter, "With man, salvation is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Peter then asks, "What about all of us?" Meaning the apostles. "We've left everything to follow you. What will there be for us?" Jesus tells them there will be 12 thrones, one for judging each of the tribes of Israel, one for each of them. Jesus also says, conclusion of that conversation, "Many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first." A bit after today's lesson, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, and their mother came to Jesus and asked for seats on either side of Jesus in the kingdom. I guess this was their come to Jesus moment. This event set off a firestorm amongst the apostles. And if the apostles are anything like the humans that we are, the outrage wouldn't have been about the audacity of doing that. It's, what about us? Where do we fit into that? Jesus called the apostles together, and I hope it would set them straight. He told them, "If you want to be first, then first you must be a servant to all." Brother, he said, "Just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." The gospel lesson today has been given the title that somewhat misleading. It's called the Parable of the Workers. And I wonder if this isn't somewhat misleading. Is it really about the workers? Let's consider the workplace and traditions here at the time that Jesus walked on earth. A workday comprised about 10 hours, taking up most of a 12-hour day. If someone needed workers, they would go down to the town square. Traditionally, folks would hang out there, waiting the work, the final work of the day. A day's wages was a denarius. And by all accounts, that was the traditional salary for someone that gave up a full 10-hour day. We can assume that these laborers agreed because the landowner sent them out into his vineyards and off they went. We do not know the reasons why, but the landowner came back. He returned about 9 o'clock at what's called the third hour. Here we're told that the landowner hired more folks and promised them wages that were right for the work that they were to perform. He came back at noon, 6th hour, our co-workers and returned again at 3 the ninth hour and hired additional workers. It is implied that the landowner offered the same deal to his prospective employees, that they would be paid whatever is right for their labors. Around 5 o'clock in the evening, call the 11th hour in our story, the landowner returned to the town square yet again. The landowner finds folks standing there and asks, "Have you been standing here all day?" And they reply, "No one hires." The landowner tells them to go. "Go work in my vineyard." And Matthew tells us, at the end of the day, the foreman is calling the workers so that the owner can pay. Further, the foreman asks that the last hire be brought in first. Imagine, and I'm sure you can, what it must have been like for folks to work a single hour to receive a full day's wage. Amazing. What a surprise. I can further imagine those workers who came to work later in the day standing back watching this transpire, contemplating the higher math if someone worked 1 hour and received a full day wage, what must I receive for working all day long? A really big surprise, as you know, came later. No matter what time you were hired, you received the same wages. You only received paid wages. Complaints, the grumbling. We have borne the burden of the work and suffered in this monstrous heat all day long. And those two have just got it. I can imagine. Is this treatment right? Is it just? Is it fair? And arguments go wrong. The elder, though, maintains his voice, his calm, and gives only a slight response, a polite rebuke. He addresses them as friend and tells them, "I am not being unfair," and asks them, "Did you agree to work for the amount of money that you have in your hand?" They wouldn't leave them very far to go with their argument. So what is this parable really about? Is it about fairness, justice, righteousness, and emotions in this story run the gamut? Joy for the folks who got their late and earned a full day's salary, given full benefits. Jealousy or envy for those who felt they were treated poorly, working all day, a 10-hour day, and receiving the same benefits as those who worked only 1 hour. And anger at the landowner, because even though he clearly gave them a fair bargain for their day, that's all they received. But this story is not about any of those. It's really about grace, God's grace. We might define grace as the free and unmerited favor of God, as manifested in the salvation of mankind, and the bestowal of blessings on us. I believe the actions of the apostles in these two adjacent stories I've related to you tell us much about this story and that grace. In the first of the story, many believe that wealth was a sign that God was already favoring someone, and that their neighbors did not receive part of the blessing they had because they were not quite as worthy. And consider that heaven might be the same, and Jesus told them clearly that it is not the same. Many who are first shall be last. A similar response was given in the story. James, John, and their mother. Whoever wants to be first must first be a slave to all. At the end of the day, when we come to receive our wages, will each of us come thinking about what we have earned? Or can we remind ourselves that the Son of Man gave his life as a ransom for many, that includes us? And we come with a true humility, thanking God that he is overly generous.